Good morning. Before we move on to discuss today's Maror Mekoymos, I'd like to just go back for a moment and clarify two of the points that we discussed last week that caused a bit of confusion. Last week we focused on what is the shar. We know what noah is if you overcharge someone by more than a sixth, then the deal is off. You return the item, you get a full refund. By exactly a sixth, if you either overcharge or if you underpay, the halacha was kano masrei no. The deal stands, but you have to refund the amount that was overcharged. Less than a sixth, the halacha was if the price is, it's close, it's within a sixth of the fair market value. There the halacha was, there was no recourse. The sale stands, you don't get any refund. But the Rosh had it, there was a suffix in the Rosh, whether you were over an Isser, you weren't over an Isser, but there's no recourse. What happens when there's a sale? How does that impact the Shar? How does that impact the fair market value? So in general, a sale does not change the market value. Because by definition, if the item costs $200, and a store says we have a 20% sale, the store is making very clear the value of the goods, $200. For whatever reasons they have, they want to clear out merchandise, they need to raise capital, they have a sale. And they're saying clearly this is below the market value and willing to sell it at this price anyway. And therefore, when we look at Shar Sheh B'Shok, we will not look at the people who happen to have sales that week, we're going to look at the normal pricing. However, there's an important exception. And that is many sales are really fake sales. They're not really sales at all. You have a camera. When the camera first comes out, it's new, it's brand new, it has a couple extra bells and whistles, new technology, and it costs $200. 6 months later, this camera is probably obsolete. They're about to come out with newer models. So what happens? There's a sale. They have a sale for until February 15th, $50 off the camera. Now, in reality, the price is never going back up. Because come February 16th, either they're going to extend the sale if they still have inventory, or now the list price is going to drop from $200 to $150 because the camera is worth less. So in these cases, although it may be called a sale, since if the price is never going back up, then that will change the shar. That will change what the market value is, and the oino will be based on this sale price. So it'll come out, it's a very very interesting halachas. Let's say you're dealing with cameras. And the camera, they come out with a new type of camera, it was just made. You have a little protexio, you're the first person selling it. The list price is $199. How do we define the oino in this case? How much can you charge for this camera? The answer is whatever you want. Because if nobody else is selling the camera, at this point in time you have a monopoly. So whatever price you set, you are the shar. The manufacturer may suggest a price, but if it's not available at that price, there is no shar, you can charge whatever you want. A couple weeks later, as it becomes more readily available, there are more stores that carry it, now suddenly there'll be a shar. You have to look at your competitors. If everyone else is selling it for $200 or for $180, you have to be consistent with that value, and if you charge above that, there'll be a shayla by no.
We're on the curve.
Okay, that was really what we discussed last week. There was some shittas that said you go with a mode, you take because there are the roiv stores agree that it's not either higher or lower than that price. The Aruch HaShulchan said if you have a shayla that there are different price points, and each of them is popular, there are many stores selling at 180 and 200, either one is acceptable. At what point it's going to be? There are no hard numbers. If you have a monopoly, clearly there's no shar. You are the shar. If there are two stores, it's also very hard to argue that either one's saying I know, because who says you're right? Maybe the other one's right. Once you have three or more in the same area, then you can probably create a shar. And that'll go. So once it becomes readily available, there's some sort of market price. The oino will be based on what that market price is, and you're going to have to make sure that your prices are in line with the market norms. Once the product is ready to start becoming obsolete, and everyone starts dropping the price to clear it out, then also that will change its value, and I know it will now be based on this clearance price, since that's what's happening. It's now obsolete, it's being moved out, and the shahr will drop. So you can sell the same item for the same price, and one day it'll be perfectly mutter, and a few days later, it's very likely for it to be issa d'oraisa, because if the market changed, and now it's worth less, your prices have to change to conform with the market price. Now, a number of people came over either last week or today, and the question was: if we have all these halachos, you can't take advantage, you can't raise your prices. How are you supposed to earn a living? The answer, to put it quite bluntly, is honestly. The Chinuch explains that the mitzvah of Oino, he says, even if there was no mitzvah, it was royally esbekach, it's a svara. If you're buying goods, you're selling goods, you're selling services, again, services we'll have to deal with later, but there's a market price. Whatever that market price is it's because merchants and stores are entitled to a markup, they're entitled to earn a return for their time, for their investment, and there's a standard markup, there's a standard shahr shebashuk. Charging that, earning a profit, is perfectly legitimate. That's what people are in business for. But if a client happens to wander into your store, he's naive, he doesn't know what the value is, taking advantage of him, taking advantage of the fact that he doesn't know what he really should be paying, and charging him more, that is I know, and that's us.
It's so classic. I mean, there's Israel or someplace where there's a tourist and
okay, so Baruch Hashem, due to the internet, there's less taking place today. But if you have the good fortune of finding someone who really is clueless and hasn't yet figured out how to Google something, if you take it. That's a good point. Oino is certainly less common today. But where it is most prevalent is either in industries where there's a professional industry, where there's a relationship where people don't price out every item. For example, you can have an electronics store that has a great reputation of having phenomenal prices. And when you buy a camera, it's great. But then when you buy that extended service warranty, they take you for a ride. Now, people don't realize that because when you price around, people know how much the camera costs in 10 different stores. They never thought about pricing what the warranty is. You know, you'll have it, so that on that warranty, again, we'll have to deal with what a warranty is. Is it good services? Anybody mamish? But at least theoretically, in these cases where you have great prices on some goods and the other goods that people don't compare as much, that would be a clear case of Oino. Now, I don't. If they all do it, then that's the shahr. But assuming they don't all do it, the other person has mediocre prices on the camera, but their batteries are, you know, everyone has their niche. I don't know how things work in Muncie, but I know in many cities, if you ask people what is the cheapest, which groceries have the best prices? Since usually you have one or two groceries that their niche is they're cheap and their taka cheaper. Most of the other ones, it's impossible to know. Because if you compare the price of milk and bread, they're probably virtually the same in every store. Okay, well, we'll get to that in a minute. That's a good point. The Aruch HaShulchan discusses that. So milk and bread, where everyone buys virtually every day, they all charge the same price because no one wants, if you raise your prices, everyone will realize you're more expensive and people will go elsewhere. On the other hand, you'll have one store, when you buy fish, the price will be an extra $2. The next store, fish is cheap, but a block of cheese will be $2 more. And they'll each have certain items, generally things which are not, you don't buy every day, you don't comparison shop as well. And that's where you really have an opportunity to do a note. On goods that people don't compare that much, people generally won't bother every time they go shopping and every single item, call around every single grocery to figure out where the cheapest store. That's where it's most prevalent. It's not Yev Shalavar. You can go into 10 stores and the price of cheese in 8 of them will probably be roughly the same, plus or minus a few pennies. In this particular store, their price of cheese will be higher. The other store will be the price of fish. Each one will have certain items that they're well above the market range. And that's a case where you have, where it's very, you can stay in business forever and get away with it.
You're saying that a person's mechuyev to go to a store before he buys at this one.
No. You can buy whatever you want, and you can take whatever. But the storekeeper, who is banking on the fact that you will not comparison shop, is being over in Isra right now.
It's only the store.
Probably, again, if you know that there's a no taking place, that you may have a chiyuv to warn the person, don't get ripped off. We'll have to deal with, if there's a clear isser being done, you'd have a chiyuv to tell the store owner. If you're going to lose your job, we'll have to deal with that. That's a more involved issue. Now, he raised a good point about if it's government subsidized, the Aruch HaShulchan points out that these rules of ashtos, a sixth, more than a sixth, less than a sixth, that's all based on, as the Rush explains, there are certain natural variances in the market. People sometimes are willing to pay a little more, people sometimes are willing to sell it for a little less. It's also difficult to figure out a price. You have a used car, it's banged up, a little this, you take an expert, there'll be a range, you don't get it to the penny exactly what it's worth. On the other hand, if you have subsidized goods, where the government sets a price, or even if it's not subsidized, if you have the container of milk where everyone sells it for the same price, there the Aruch HaShulchan says any amount you overcharge is going to be ayna, lekulayam, even less than a shtos. Because since there's a set price, doesn't need a shuma, doesn't need any expert, and you've simply just taken advantage of the one person on the planet that doesn't know how much a container of milk should cost, that's ayna. It's only when it varies, people pay more, people pay less, that's when we have these three different guidelines. But anything which is very clear and very set, I know will apply to any amount.
Tell me if this is a question or not. If you're selling an age-graded product, which you're selling the same price as the regular product, my favorite example like that being Salmisra, which has an inaccurate date on it. So really, it says it's good for another 3 days. Mm-hmm. Really, it starts to spoil after another 2 days. Is that the issue?
It's a fraud issue. There are two related halachos. There's I know, which is in Siman Reish Chav Zayin, which is what we're learning today, and that's overpricing or underpaying. There's a related issue of Mekav Tois, and that is if you sell defective goods. Very often, the issues are related. Because even if for whatever technical reasons we're going to argue it's not called defective, if the market value of this milk should be lower, because spoiled milk generally costs less than fresh milk, then you'll have both issues, both the fraud part and the oil part. So there are two separate issues. Very often you'll have, in any given case, you very often have to deal with both of the issues. Now another, just to make it clear, oil has nothing to do with the intention to mislead. The case of oil is even b'shogeg. Everyone is acting in good faith. The seller may think this is the fair market value of the goods. It's not because he's intentionally taking advantage. The halachas that I know will apply. If the sale price was not consistent with the market norms, even though everyone thought it was at the time, once they discover it wasn't, you get a refund. It has nothing to do with the kavana or the intent to take advantage of the other person.
I don't want to be a dead horse, but I have a grocery in Borough Park where there are 150 grocery stores. And in Flatbush, first of all, how far do I have to go? And second of all, do I have to hire somebody full time to visit all the stores to make sure any particular day that I can't run a sale is going to be?
Okay, two points. As far as how far to go, I can't give you a distance in miles or kilometers. You'd have to look at the shire. People who buy, for example, if you're a restaurant, the shire is generally within people within the city. That's how far they'll travel for a restaurant. You can't compare the prices in Manhattan to the prices in Muncie, the prices in Lakewood or Passaic. If you're selling some expensive goods, which are very expensive, people will travel a little further. So I don't know that if you're selling these expensive mainframes, probably the shire is not dependent on in this Borobar Flatbush. People will travel whatever the radius is. So you'll have to look at groceries is something that people generally do locally, especially in Borough Park. It, where they don't, people very often will just go walk down the block to their grocer or just have it delivered. So there you'll have to look. The location will be much smaller. As far as how you make sure that your prices are consistent, so 2 points. The first thing is that whatever industry your people are in, they generally know where their competitors are. Halacha, not halacha, they have to stay in business. A tagger generally knows very accurately what the market price for these goods are. Now, it happens to be, if you look at the rush that we discussed last week, the rush wanted to know about if your price is within a sixth, we learned there's no recourse. Now, the question is it usser or is it completely mutter? And the rush, it was a suffix, we're mach. However, if you look carefully at the rush is mashma, that if it's within a sixth, it's only usser, even the tzad that it's usser is only if you know the price is lower and you take advantage. If it's b'shoigig, if you charging within a sixth more, b'shoigig his mashma l'kul yam, there will be no isser. So to be off by for an expert who's in the industry, to be off by a sixth without knowing it is very uncommon. So you don't have to hire anyone to go around. You probably know everything you need to know to stay in business. That's what I know. Because the shire is not the suggested retail price. Suggested retail prices in most industry is a ceiling. You can't charge above that because that's what's marked on the goods. But if everyone is discounting it, the shire is how much people pay, how much these goods are sold for. And if everyone's selling it for $1.79, that is going to be the shire. So we don't, you don't look at that, but it does create a ceiling. I mean, there was one of the groceries in Lakewood, they had these snack bags, these Wise potato chips that say on it 25 cents, and every store on the planet sells it for 25 cents. And they took their stickers, and they put it on top of the price, and they wrote 35 cents. That is a classic case of I know, because every other store sells it for that price, because it's marked on it. They had the chutzpah to cover it over and charge more. That's a clear case of I know. Okay, so let's move on. Let's go through all of the Maramakamis that we learned today. Now, based on Hilchos Aino, what we've learned the last 2 weeks, everyone, I'm sure, after the shiur last week went home, started thinking back over the past 20 years, every business person that took advantage of them, everyone that charged them too much, made a list. Listen, times are tight, people need the extra cash. So you go back, call them all up, say, remember 20 years ago, you sold me these goods. You ripped me off. I want a refund. So halacha is, as we saw today, there is a statute of limitations, if you will, to Aino. If you want to claim Aino, you have to come back to Deish Yer Latada. You have enough, as soon as you buy the goods, you have enough time to go to an expert, to a friend, to a relative, someone who knows the market value of the goods. Ask him, was this a fair price? And if it wasn't, you have to go back right away and get a refund. There's no set amount of time for this. It depends on the goods. It depends on the place where you are, how accessible you are to experts. But as Tysus explains, each place will have you'll have to take an average. How long it typically takes to determine the prices of goods, and you have to act immediately. If you don't, if you buy something, you go home, you don't bother trying to find out whether the price is fair, the Rishonim explain there's a mechila. There's a mechila. If you care about getting a good bargain, you have to act right away. The Chinuch adds that it's a takana over here. If the halacha was, you can go back la'olam, that any customer can come back to you at any time, decades later, it'd be very hard to stay in business and keeping track of, you know, you'd have your record keeping, and you wouldn't... There has to be finality to a deal, and therefore you have a limited time frame. You have to act right away. You get a quote. You take the goods. You get a quote, and you come back. Now, today the time frame is not going to be very long, since today virtually everything that you buy is mass produced. There's a UPC. There's a catalog number. There's a UPC symbol. You can just pick up the phone. You can Google it. You can probably get it from your cell phone. So because of the amount of time that it takes to figure out the pricing today is very, very brief. Probably a few hours at most for most goods. Now, it does come out, as we discussed last week, figuring out the value of an item is usually not that straightforward. Googling it will not tell you the price of the goods. Because if you bought in a local store, you get service, you're asking them for advice, you can return it, you get it now, you don't have to wait for shipping. The shar for a local electronics store is going to be different than the value of buying it over the internet. So if you want to figure out the price, you have to really be comparing apples to apples. You have to pick up the phone and figure out what it'll cost in another store. Simply checking what it'll cost online would not necessarily give you the information you need to figure out whether it's enough. But still, because things have a catalog number, they're mass-produced, it's not a very long amount of time that you have to claim enough. Now, the Aruch HaShulchan adds, and there are a number of, there's a Shittim Betis that sounds like this as well, that even though once the Mis Kedei Shir L'Tagar, once the buyer waits a day or two, he cannot claim Oino, still, he says, there's a Midas Chasidus on the seller's end, it's a Midas Chasidus to give him a refund. If the buyer claims he didn't know, he didn't realize, he didn't bother checking, but he was never Moichel, so you can't be Mechayiv him. There's an assumption that he was Moichel, but as a Midas Chasidus, the right thing to do is to give him a refund. Now, we had a very interesting story. It was a couple of years ago. A person bought a business, a restaurant. Now, the arrangement that he made, and today very often when you buy businesses, he paid half up front, and the rest of it he made, there were payments over 2 years. Now, apparently in the restaurant business or in the food business, the restaurants get bought and sold very often. And it's very hard to figure out what they're really worth. In this particular case, the seller had made all sorts of projections. We did this amount of volume over the past 2 years. And they agreed upon a certain number. The buyer took over the store. And sure enough, after 6 months, he realized the numbers, the volume wasn't anywhere near what the seller represented. Now, this happens all the time in Dinei Torah. So they come, he claims it to Mekach Tais. You ripped me off. The seller, of course, says, of course, we were doing great. But you came in, you changed the recipe, you advertised too much, too little, you changed the decor. That's why the volume stopped. Now, to prove there was fraud, and to prove that the numbers were originally wrong, is virtually impossible. There's no way to, we don't know, even that having, knowing what the sales were after it changed hands doesn't tell us what happened before. But in this particular case, even based on the seller's numbers, it was clear the price was not appropriate. They had worked it out. They basically had the deal was he paid twice the profit. They took the last year's profit and they doubled that. That was the sales price, which sounds like a reasonable valuation for the business. What the seller didn't bother explaining to the buyer was that the seller worked there full time. So although it may have been making a $50,000 a year profit, he wasn't taking a salary. Which basically means that it was generating zero profit, and forgetting about taking aside the fact that you could build a business, it really had no value. So the question is, in Hilchos Oino, can you claim Oino if you were overcharged for a business? Now, there's going to be one question of what is a business? Is it tangible, not tangible, goodwill? And that's something we'll have to get to a different week. But the question I want to discuss is, can you claim Oino 6 months after you bought the business? The Moicher said, nothing doing. Whenever you buy something, if you want to claim Oino, you have to go Kedei Shir L'Tagar. You have to bring it to an expert, find out if the price is fair, and come right back. If you waited 6 months, that's clearly longer than Kedei Shir L'Tagar, you have no recourse, and I'm not giving you any money back. Now, the halacha is not like that. Why? Zach, there are really two different approaches. But the Shaimel says a beautiful svar. Why is there a time frame? What happens a day later? Why can't you claim Oino? The answer is, there's a mechila. If you don't act right away, if you don't find out what the fair price is, we assume you're being moichel, you're accepting the price. Zach the Shaar Mishpat, that's only, you buy goods, you pay for it, you take the goods home. So there, you want to make sure it was a fair deal. But what happens if you didn't pay for the goods? There, the buyer says, I have no pressure. I have no reason to go figure out whether it's a good deal or not. When you send me an invoice and I have to start and I have to finish paying for the goods, then I'll make sure it's a fair price. But until I finish paying for it, where I'm holding on to the money and I'm holding on to the goods, there's no pressure. And therefore, he has the right to wait. The Kedeshi Lataka does not apply. It's only when you pay in full and you take the goods, then if you have any dreams of going back and returning it, you have to act right away. But if you're still holding on to the cash, or even if you're holding on to a chunk of it, then the Kedeshi Lataka doesn't apply, and you can wait as long as you want to be chayzer. Other Rishayim say the same halacha with a little bit of a different mahalach. They say the reason why there's no Kedeshi Lataka, there's no time frame if you haven't paid yet, is you have a migu. Since you could say paraiti, since when the person asks for the payment, you can say, I've already paid you. And the halacha is, as long as there's no shtar, you're believed to say that you've paid. So because you could say paraiti, there's a migu, we believe you when you say you weren't moichel. So even though the assumption normally is, if you don't act right away, there's a mechila. When you have a migu, when you're holding on to the money, the halacha is, you're neman to say that you weren't moichel. So therefore, this entire halacha, this whole thing of time frame is when you pay in cash, you pay for it immediately. If you bought it on credit, if the money is still due, then you will be able to claim or not indefinitely. Right. Right. Logically, it should. It would probably depend. If it's a svar of amigo, whatever you're holding on to, you would be believed. And therefore, you can't ask for money back, but whatever you haven't paid, with this amigo, you'd be believed that there wasn't a mechila. If you go with the other argument, that there's no pressure to check the price until you actually cut the check, then al pi svar, I would say, if you're paying 95% of it, that pressure was there and you should have checked. I haven't found this chiluk in the Achroinim, but it is a very, very logical time. Now this halacha applies only by a buyer. The buyer buys the goods, he's holding on to the goods, he has to go check right away. A seller, the halacha is, there's no time limit. And if he ever realizes that he undercharged for the goods, he can call the person back, and he can undo the sale. And the reason is very simple. He sold the goods, he doesn't have it in his possession anymore, he has no way to figure out what the fair price would have been. Now, based on this, the Rambam says that if you sell a commodity where you don't need the physical goods to determine what the fair price was, then also the moicher will have a time frame. He'll have to check right away. It's only when you're selling something unique where you need physical possession of the goods to know what the price is. There, if you don't have physical possession, there's no way to figure out the price. You have lo'olam. But today, where anything which you're selling, if it's mass produced, you can figure out the price, and even if you don't have it, even on unique goods, if you still have another one in stock, and you can show that one to an expert, also this halacha will not apply. And the time frame will be basically as long as you have to figure out what the price should be. Now we had a fascinating case that came to the Beis Din a few years ago. There were two friends. One of them became a soifer, he moved to Eretz Yisrael. The other one went into business, and he was very successful. So one day, the businessman called up his friend, the soifer. He knew he was struggling a little bit, and he said, listen, I want to buy a Sefer Torah. They negotiated a price, $15,000, so they signed a contract, and he's going to write a Sefer Torah for him. He asked, when do you need it by? And he said, it's not a rush. If you have other jobs, it's low priority, do your other jobs first. This is the contract, whenever you deliver it, everything will be fine. Now, apparently if you tell a sefer that there's no rush, he didn't rush. And it schlepped, and it schlepped, and it schlepped, and it schlepped. 15 years later, the sefer Torah was completed. So the sefer calls up his friends, you're not going to believe this, the sefer is ready. So he said, wonderful, I'll wire you the $15,000. And you send me the Sefer Torah. Sefer said, $15,000. That was back in the 80s. Now it's worth $35,000. I want you to pay the fair market value today. Business said, what are you talking about? We agreed on 15. A deal's a deal. We signed a contract. The fact that you slept and you made it longer, I have to pay you an extra $20,000 because you slept it out? Doesn't make sense. A contract is a contract. What is the halacha? So the part of the Eros in Chelik Beis Siman Ches discusses a very similar case. And he says as follows. First he deals with, there are many cases where if you lock in a price, there's a ribbis shaila. We're going to put that aside. He didn't put any money down, there's no ribbis shaila. There's a second issue of kinyanim. When you can't sell something that you don't own, that it doesn't exist, and therefore it's not so easy to make a contract that's binding on the parties. Let's put that aside also. Let's assume they made an appropriate kinyan, they made a contract, he's bound to deliver the goods. Zakta panim miras, there's a contract. He has to deliver the goods. There's also halacha vayna. When you buy something, you have to pay the fair market price. So if I sell you something, and we make a kinyan today, or you pay me in full today, which he says is the same, so then if I deliver in 15 years or in 20 years or tomorrow, it makes no difference. The kinyan is today, the sale took place today, we look at today's price. But if it's just an agreement to sell something in the future, so at that future day, we're going to have to look at what the shahar shebishuk is. And if the shahar at that point is $35,000, and you force the person to give it to you for $15,000, the punim iris says is an issu d'oraisa v'ayna. And therefore you will have to look at the current market value. Now the Beis Ephraim, in a very similar case, argues. Beis Ephraim's case was, a merchant did a deal, they priced the goods in marks. World War II broke out, the mark is now worthless, and after the war, so he wants to pay for the goods, so he brings 1,000 marks, which before the war was worth a small fortune, now it's worth however much 1,000 pieces of paper are worth, and says, here's the money. What's the halacha? So here the Beis Ephraim says like this. Beis Ephraim says, when two people make a deal that we're going to deliver something in a year from now, there's a futures contract. Everyone realizes maybe the price will go up, maybe the price will go down. And they're taking a risk. If they want to take the risk, then I'm going to be willing to hedge my bets. The seller is afraid the price will drop. The buyer is afraid the price will go up, so they basically swap futures. They have the right to do that. That's not a no. It was a futures swap. So Zohar Beis Ephraim, that's a case of Sabra B'Kibel. They're agreeing to lock in the price, they're agreeing to take the risk, and therefore the Hilchos Aino will not apply. Afal Pikein, he says, if a war breaks out, and now the currency becomes worthless, if a person priced something in dollars, and then the economy blows up, and the dollars just plummets, or shoots up, whichever way, there the Beis Ephraim says you can back out. There he says it's an oinus, even to business people, if it's something which they couldn't have anticipated, he says they can bracket, not because of oinog, it's because of mekartois. But in a normal case, if you lock in a price, it's a heskim, it's an agreement, Beis Ephraim argues on the panamiris. Now in our case, I would suggest there's no machlokes. Because Beis Ephraim agrees in concept to the panamiris. That if you have an agreement to buy something in the future, I know it will go on the future date, the time that the sale takes place. Beis Ephraim just argues and says, when we lock in a price, when I'm hedged, the seller and buyer each want to hedge their bets, so that hedge works in halacha. Mashenkin, in our case, they were supposed to do it. The Sefer Torah should have been done in a couple of months. They didn't agree on a price because this is a long-range strategic 15-year deal, and the Sefer wanted to make sure to lock in a price, and the buyer wanted to lock in a price. They agreed on a price and they thought it would be ready in a year. There was no kavana to hedge the bets and to take risks. So if it did schlep out over time, then even the Beis Ephraim would agree to the panim iros that if, as far as Hilchos Aynoi is concerned, we will look at the Shaar Shebashuk, we will look at the price at the day of delivery, and therefore there would be Aynoi, and he'd be entitled to the fair market value.
The price is based on the labor that was put in, a lot of labor was put in at the original price.
I'm not so sure. I think it was all done in the last 6 months. But that is a good point, that there are different ways when you order goods, and this is really a nesivus in Shin Lamed Gimel. In theory, you could hire someone to write the Sefer Torah. If that's the case, it's a question of Sefiras Poyalim, which will have completely different halachas. But very often that's not the case. Very often it's basically an agreement that if you deliver this Sefer Torah, I will buy it from you. In that case, it's Mekach U'Memkar. I mean, there'll be differences as far as Baal Talim. There'll be many differences in Halacha, exactly how the contract is worded. No, because I know it's Yosef Mishnos. Every time there's I know, if the price is off by more than a sixth, Halacha is the deal is off. So in this case, since it went from 15 to 35, it's Yosef Mishnos, the deal is off. The Sefer does not have to deliver it for 15, but the buyer certainly does not have to take delivery for 35. Well, that would be the Beis Ephraim's case. The Beis Ephraim makes the point that if the parties agree and they lock it in, there's basically they're saying specifically, I'm taking a risk that it'll go down, you're taking a risk that it'll go up, that risk is legitimate, there the Beis Ephraim says that it would be binding. It would be binding because it's a suburb of a kibbutz.
If you prepay,
you run, so there's a mile and there's a chasarim. As far as Hilchos Lagno, the Panim Iri says if you pay the full value, not partial, not a deposit, you pay the full value, we look at it as if the transaction happened right then and there. And it was yours. He says in a case where it's in a Veshusa, it could be if you have to write the Sefer Torah, it might be different. But as far as those halachas, you'd have an advantage. In Hilchos Ribbis, you'd have a problem. Because in Hilchos Ribbis, if you prepay for goods and in exchange for the prepayment, they freeze a price. There's a halacha of there's an isser of psika, and depending on the case, alts isser ribbis, you will not be able to buy a $35,000 sefer Torah for $15,000 because that $20,000 will be looked at as schar mitanis mois. It's the profit that you got in exchange for a prepayment for a loan. So therefore, depending on the case, you'll have an isser of ribbis, which will wipe out the deal anyway. So depends on the case. No, if the price dropped, you are ripping the person off. Because today, these goods are only worth $150.
Can you say regularly $200, now special sale $150?
So if all the store, your competitors, say regular $200, now $150, then perhaps you could. But if the price has changed, and now everyone's selling it for $150, you can write list price $200, because that is the list price, but if regular price normally is understood like that as well, that would be fine. But what you're writing has to be true.
Is that the case of the Sefer Torah? Isn't that really what we call self-inflicted or
correct. The Beis Ephraim's point is that if you enter it, no one's going to shut down the futures market. Because the futures market is there for people to hedge risk in the future. If the whole point is to hedge the risk, then the parties that enter and then say, I'm willing to pay X amount of dollars for a put option or for a call option, they're specifically saying, there's a risk, we're taking that risk, this is how we're pricing the risk. However, when you buy a Sefer Torah, and in this case, no one was hedging any futures market. They were expecting immediate delivery. The buyer and seller both agreed that whenever you deliver it, that's okay with me. I'm not going to be machbit. But because there was no implicit or explicit agreement to hedge risk, we will look at Einoah at the time that the sale actually closes.
But the buyer standpoint, the seller standpoint, he essentially should be able to live in a situation where he can live because he's
controlled
the risk.
No. If the price plummeted, and now a Sefer Torah is only worth $5,000, you would have had the same issue in reverse. The buyer would have been able to say, I agreed to pay $15,000, at that time that was the value, today it's worth $5, I'll pay you $5 for it, nothing more. So it was, the risk is equal, but it's, you know, they're each exposed equally to the risk.
It was essentially a futures contract where
one party could determine the time of delivery because that's what they agreed upon. You know, we're not going to stop people from entering into agreements that are not wise. But that was what the Hescom was. There was no time frame. They specifically agreed, whenever you deliver it, that's fine. And that means you're assuming the risk that you negotiated.
If you're in a marketplace, when there are Jews and non-Jews, you have to cut your price. Are you meeting the price of all the sellers or only the Jewish?
So you have to look at your competition. If you're dealing with cameras, buyers don't discriminate whether the sellers are Jewish or non-Jewish. It's the same. You're selling the same camera. Therefore, if you want to determine fair market, the market price, you'd look at the market of the sellers, which is both Jews and non-Jews. As far as your chiyuv to drop the price, it does come out a bit interesting that the Isser Oino applies only between two Jews. Legally, a goy has every right to charge whatever he wants. There's no Isser unless, you know, price gouging is just in specific cases. But as long as you're not making any misrepresentations, legally there's no Isser of, you know, charging above market value. And therefore, halacha doesn't impose these extra restrictions on a transaction between a yid and a goy. So if your buyer is a goy, there would be no Isser Oino. If your buyer is a yid, there would be an Isser Oino. How you're going to determine if you're selling online, beyond, I have no idea. No, you do, because when they drop, if we want to define the market value, we're going to look at all the sellers. And if the sellers, whether they're Jewish or not, have dropped the price, now that defines the market value. Now, that being said, now the market value dropped from 200 to 150. If a guy comes in the store and I sell it to him for 200, I was not over any issa. If a yid comes in and buys it for 200, I was over an issa. Excuse me? You're going to have to drop the price if a yid comes in and buys it. Now, I don't think it's very practical to sell it at two different prices, whether they're Jewish or not. Now, again, in general, we're going to see in Choshen Mishpah, when it comes to Gezel, if you're stealing, you're lying, you're cheating, you can't steal, lie, or cheat from a yid, and you can't steal, lie, or cheat from a goy. Whenever we're dealing with halachos, which are a midas chasidus, or an extra, you know, a lefnim mishuras adin, they're generally the same way legally a goy is allowed to charge whatever he wants as long as he's not telling the truth. There's no isser either doing that to a goy. In general, the halachos of a goy, if it's something which is morally and be'etzim wrong, you can't do it to a yid or to a goy. If it's a special chumrah, either a lefnim mishuras adin or something which is how you treat another yid, or, you know, how you treat a brother, there will be distinctions between the halachos of a yid and a goy. So we discussed last week, there was a fundamental question of when there is in the marketplace, if there's a roiv selling at one price and a mead at another price. According to some, you go with straight roiv, and if that would be the case, assuming they're all in the same marketplace, then it doesn't matter whether they're Jewish or not, you would go with the roiv. However, we pointed out from Yorach HaShulchan that if in the marketplace there are two sharim, there are two prices that are both perfectly acceptable, you'll have four stores selling for one price and three for another price, Yorach HaShulchan says that would not be Oino. Since this is a legitimate and common price throughout the shar, that would not be called Oino. Oino would be if you'd be above what the three sell it for.
Is there a share
form? But,
No.
No, the Aruch HaShulchan does not define it. And it's not clear in halacha exactly what the cutoff will be. All right, thank you.